and welcome to Frothy, home of the fun, frivolous, lowbrow froth that your Twitter excels at. We're here to talk about the best things in the world of pop culture, from celebrities to influencers and all of the nonsense in between. And you're joined by me, Elle, a London-based 28-year-old writer who spends a lot of time chatting and reading about the fun, silly topics that maybe your boss, your parents, your partner, whoever, questions why you enjoy so much. Each week, we're going to be talking about the best bits that pop culture has to offer, and this is your safe space to enjoy, dissect, and binge on the frothy nonsense that brings you a smile. Hello, everybody. I'm back. I took an accidental hiatus. I am incredibly sorry. I had several complaints, which I'm very grateful because it means you do listen. But yes, I am sorry about that. I am in the process of moving, and I didn't factor in quite how stressful that was going to be. And I'm finding it stressful, and therefore I dropped balls left, right, and centre, and Frothy was one of the balls I dropped. So apologies. I hope you're all doing well. I am back. I am ready to go. I have no plans to drop any more balls for the rest of the year. And yeah, I think it's time we dive right in with the best of the brain rot, which is, of course, the silly stories that got us talking this week. Up first, I wanted to talk about Liv Schmidt. If you don't know who Liv is, I think that's totally fair enough. She is from a very particular side of the internet or of socials. And if you're not in that world, I do not think you will have seen her whatsoever, because there's a real, in some ways, lack of cross-pollination there simply because of what she promotes and talks about. To give a bit of background, Liv is 23 years old. She's an American content creator, and all of her content and the community she has built and the messaging she puts out is entirely focused on skinniness and being as slim as possible and eating as little as possible and doing anything and everything to remain to be as physically small as you can possibly be. And that's kind of it. That's what she preaches, that's what she values, and that's what she encourages onto others. Which I think is a tricky conversation, because I think anybody who has such strong values around body image and food, I think there's a lot going on below the surface that I am in no way qualified to talk about or dissect or anything of the sort. But Liv is a huge creator. She is heavily followed. Up until late last year, she was followed on both TikTok and Meta, or Instagram. But in September 2024, she was banned from TikTok because of her content and the potential and probable damage it was doing to a young audience. And then this week, she has clashed with Meta. And this is because of an article that The Cut published, or New York Magazine published, obviously part of the same like umbrella press organization. But I read it on The Cut, so that's what I'm going to give credit. It was written by E.J. Dixon, and it had some incredible research behind it, but more importantly, some really powerful lines that I wanted to read you. One being, Schmidt is capitalising on a cultural moment when extreme thinness has become more acceptable. Still, she's careful. She uses language that frames choosing not to eat as empowering, even feminist. Eat like you're the main character because you are. Or eat like your highest self is watching. Or eat like your next weigh-in is tomorrow. Hopefully from that you can really understand the tone of where or what Liv puts out. You know, it's very much phrases, it's your choice, do what makes you happy, but this is what I look like and this is what I'm doing kind of vibe. And this sort of article was backed by a huge amount of research. I think I get the impression months and months. To give a sort of a wider image, Liv on Meta or on Instagram had subscriber only group chats. So this was $20 a month. You had access to the group chats. You could pick and choose which group chat you wanted to be in. As far as the journalist explained, there was no sort of rhyme or reason to each group. You could pick whichever one you wanted, group jump, all of that kind of thing. But within all of these groups, conversation was very much the same, and it was hugely focused on over-exercise, under-eating, how to ignore being hungry or postpone or push off being hungry, the effects of massively under-eating, so hair loss, the loss of your period, dizziness, headaches, and how people were combating those without eating. So, you know, there's mention of like green tea and almonds and all of those kind of things, or, you know, eating more protein and less of other things. And the really concerning part of all this was that the journalists discovered that under 18s were in these group chats when it had been made very clear by Liv that this was not a place for under 18s, although it was also apparently abundantly clear that Liv was not monitoring these group chats in any sort of way and just putting very similar sort of pre-drafted stock messages within these group chats, you know, how are we all staying skinny today, what's everyone eating today, that kind of thing. I would like to stress that I read this article and I'm now talking about it, so a lot of this isn't word for word and this is my my retelling of it. So please don't quote me word for word there with what Liv did and didn't say. But just hugely concerning and worrying content. So much so that after the story was published on the Cuts website, Meta put up an announcement and said that after careful review, they've restricted Liv's account so that it's only visible to people over 18 and it's no longer able to offer subscriptions or use any other of the monetization tools available to creators. This is mammoth, you guys, because it was estimated by Airmail that Liv earns around $130,000 per month, $130,000 US dollars per month from her Skinny Society, of which she had about 6,500 paying members. This is a huge financial loss for Liv. That is a huge chunk of change to have one day and not the next. And she was rightly rather angry about this. The Daily Mail reported, so we've jumped publications here because, you know, I like to read around. The Daily Mail reported that Liv took to Instagram to basically have a go at Meta, which always cracks me up because you're shouting at the platform on the platform. I realise that's not very coherently said. It amuses me, nonetheless. Anyway, she said, and I'm going to quote here, "Meta didn't even come to me. Despite countless support tickets, messages and outreach attempts, no one was willing to speak with me directly. I was met with silence. And meanwhile, one person with a vendetta was able to spin a false narrative that cost me my business. Anyone at Meta can look at my page and see the truth. There are thousands of testimonials. It's an adult women's community. I even have it written in the rules, no one under 18. The person spreading lies didn't just try to hurt me. They successfully manipulated your system and no one stepped in to ask a single question. I'm not going to beg to defend myself to a company that never once asked for my side of the story." Do I think that this is the case? No. Don't get me wrong, Meta is a huge organisation. I have no doubt at the times that the right arm doesn't know what the left arm is doing. But I think with something like this and the story being published on such a big press organisation, they would have checked for themselves what was going on before they made the decision to demonetize Liv's account. However, I do fully probably believe that she probably wasn't spoken to about any of this and the decision was just made because, again, Meta is so big that I can see turning off the monetization of one account being far easier than dealing with a disgruntled customer. And I think it falls back into this thing of free speech, public speech. Yes, you're free to say whatever you want, but you're not free to say whatever you want on a private platform, which is effectively what Meta is. Anyone and everyone can join, of course. But it is not, it's not free to use in that way. I mean, yes, it's free to use, but it is not, it's not the same as walking down the street and saying whatever you want. It is a platform owned by a private company that can and will do whatever they want with your account whenever they want, because that's kind of what you sign up to when you join the account. You sign so many of your rights to your content away that while I understand her frustration, I don't really think she's got a leg to stand on. Of course, I have no doubt that she will fight this. And I mean, you can probably hear I'm struggling to land the plane here because I don't quite know where I land on all of this. I can see in the future that decision being reversed, although, of course, I don't believe it has been reversed on TikTok. But yeah, struggling to land this plane. I think it's incredibly interesting. I don't think it's the end of the conversation. On a personal note, I think I am pleased about the decision to protect young minds from really dangerous thoughts around food. I do not think, though, it can be a one and done situation. Liv is just one massive content creator in a very big and growing section of the internet. We know that skinny is on the rise, or the skinny look is gaining popularity. You see it with the rise in Ozempic. You see it with the Kardashians reversing their plastic surgery. I have no doubt that skinny jeans are right around the corner once again. You see it even with like low-waisted trousers. You know, the 90s look is coming back, and with that, heroin chic, I have no doubt, is right around the corner. I will never fit into heroin chic. I think it's fair to say that it's absolutely fine. I don't think I want to. But interesting nonetheless, really fascinating. So if you hear what the name Liv Schmidt, that is what is going on. I think I'm conflicted. I'm in two minds. One, I can understand the upset and frustration of losing your paycheck overnight. Two, I think she was earning a paycheck through women's insecurities, and that will never sit right with me. So, you know, two sides of the same coin there, but let me know what you think. Our second story, and this is of course around Labubus. If, like a friend of mine at work, you don't know what a Labubu is, I think it's worth explaining. They are a soft toy that has become very much a fashion trend, because they're attached to key rings, so you can obviously attach them to bags and clothes and your keys and all sorts. And they have become increasingly trendy, especially on TikTok, after being worn by celebrities, including Dua Lipa and Rihanna. And what they are, for those of you who might have seen one and not realised what you were looking at, or, you know, if you've managed to escape the Labubu world so far, they're colourful, kind of quirky, furry monsters, I guess is a good way to describe them, created by Hong Kong-born artist Kanzeng Lung, and popularized through a collaboration with the toy store Pop Mart. And they don't do anything. That is what a Labubu is. You know, maybe 10 centimeters tall, I think, and brightly colored, fluffy, hard plastic feet and hands and face with very big eyes, and I believe are always smiling, or mostly smiling, with sharp pointed teeth. But well, they look sharp, they're all part of the plastic face, so you know it is what it is. But yes, they have absolutely boomed over the last couple of months, so much so that they have been pulled from UK stores because of reports of customers fighting over them. And I think it's really important to add here that Labubus come in obviously different colours, and with that, my understanding, based on the reading I've done, because I do not own a Labubu, is that different colours are more rare than others. So they make more of some colours than others, or they'll do like a limited release drop. And the hype around this grows because you buy them blind. You don't know what colour you're getting when you pick up the box from the store. Only once you've opened the box do you know what colour Labubu you've got. Therefore, there's a resale market because people will buy several hoping to get the colour they want. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But then they then have ones that they don't want, and they resell them on places like Vinted and eBay to people who do want that particular colour. And prices can range from anything from sort of £13.50 through to £50, according to Metro, which does not surprise me at all, because this screams jelly cat to me in so many ways. And the reselling market has just absolutely boomed. They are all over my Vinted and my eBay. And like I said, it's giving a slightly more manic, more crazed version of the jelly cat hype. There's an energy difference between a Labubu and a jelly cat. And it's mania, I think it's fair to say. They're just, I don't know if it's, I can't tell you what it is, because I'd argue they're both cute in their own little way. They're both kind of kids' toys. They're both fluffy and soft, but the Labubu crowd is just a little more amped up, I think it's fair to say. And obviously with that, there's also been a rise in fake Labubus, known as Lafufus. And based on my TikTok research, I think you can often tell it's a fake one by their feet. They're either a little wonky, or they've got unbranded feet, or they just don't look quite right. So if you are in the market, check the feet first. I think check before you buy if you're buying secondhand. But yeah, last week in Stratford, London, there were physical fistfights over sort of a restock of the toy at Pop Mart. So much so that Pop Mart has decided to pull the toy from UK shelves until it can work out a fairer system for the restock. And that fascinates me. That blows my mind, because these were not children, you know, fighting here. This was grown adults throwing punches to blind buy a toy, and I have absolutely no doubt the majority of them there were resellers. The BBC interviewed one customer, and I thought what she had to say was really quite interesting. She apparently had been standing outside of this shop since 3 a.m. Given that I suspect the store opened around 9 a.m, that is dedication and a half. It reminds me of, you know, back when there was a Harry Potter new book drop, and there would be fans queuing out overnight to get their hands on the first print run. And Victoria said that people were shouting and saying that there were no more Labubus. And she even witnessed a fight between a worker and a customer. It was a really bad experience, and it was obviously very scary. And the BBC was told by the store that while no PopMart employees had been injured, they'd chosen to act early and prevent any potential safety issues from occurring by pulling the stock. Despite this chaos, fans are obviously, well, fans, shoppers, resellers, interested parties, whatever you want to call them, despite the chaos, they have been unhappy by PopMart's decision to pull the stock from stores, which blows my mind. But one person on Instagram turned around and actually blamed PopMart and said that it was their fault for causing the hype because of the drip feeding of stock. If there was more stock, there'd be less hype, and therefore there'd be less chance of a fisticuffs happening. Whether or not I follow that logic, I don't know, but others also blamed resellers for the upset and the dispute and the decision to pull the stock. I think that's probably highly accurate. They wouldn't need to pull the stock if there was fist fights breaking out. But nonetheless, it has happened. The BBC also spoke to Susan Streeter, who is head of money and markets at Hargreaves Lansdown, and who made what I think to be a really interesting point. And she said, the big crowds building on stock drop days have clearly become a costly headache to manage. Out of control crowds could affect ultimately the brand's playful and fun appeal, which is likely to be why sales have been paused. She warned that suspension would probably lead to demand building up again and more attempts to buy the dolls online, but that they would sell out within seconds. And also made the point, this pause in sales could push more fans to resale sites and then counterfeit Labubus being sold, and that therefore there was a risk for customers being duped into buying fakes. And I think it's a double-edged sword in so many ways. You have to pull the stock to avoid the fights, which are bad for your rep. But by pulling the stock, you do build and concentrate the demand without being able to, sorry, I've just whacked the mic again, guys, without being able to fulfill the demand, which then pushes people to quote-unquote like desperate measures, which would be resale sites, and therefore the likelihood that people are buying fakes, and therefore the creator of those fake Labubus or the Lafufus potentially taking A, your customers away from you, but also sort of souring your name in business. And I'm not enough of a brand expert to be able to tell you either way what I think is the right move. But I think it's a fascinating move within pop culture that these have sort of blown up so quickly. But I do think it's reflective of where we are, or certainly where a lot of people who spend a lot of time online are in terms of what they spend their money on and what they value. And the real rise of sort of collectibles and the treasuring of collectibles by, I want to say, sort of 19 to 35 year olds. You know, that obviously covers sort of two generations there. I am 28 and I do kind of fall on the cusp between millennial and Gen Z. And so, you know, I'm taking old Gen Zers and young millennials together there. But there is a real move, and you see it online with people like Chinzia from The Girls' Bathroom. And, you know, even my boyfriend who collects Pokemon cards currently. People really value small, cute, nostalgic childhood toys, and I think that's partly because it reminds them of their childhood, but it's also because we are a generation that has access to, for the most part, adult money, quote unquote, if you're going to use the internet term for it, while also so many of us not being able to afford to buy our own homes for a good number of years still, if ever, simply because, you know, places like, well, the south of England, as well as I'm sure many places in America and Australia and everywhere else, I've seen the rise of Labubus based on the content I've consumed. You know, people can't afford the really big purchases, and so therefore are taking their surplus income and spending it on things that bring them joy and happiness. And it does seem to be, for the most part, collectibles. And I think that this craze has really hit sort of steroid levels in a way that, like I said, Jellycats hasn't. Probably because of the obsession of big, well, not the obsession, but the inclusion of major celebrities within this trend. You know, you don't see Rihanna walking around with a Jellycat or a Pokemon card. If you did, I think, but or one of those like naked plastic babies that wear the flowers on their heads. And I don't know what those are, but I see them everywhere. But I think if she did, we would see a similar type of trend and craze going on there. I think that coupled with the fact that you can wear these or attach these to your bags, it therefore becomes a bit like a status thing or a conversation starter or an inside, not joke is the wrong word, but people who are in the know, and people who don't know don't care. And so it's more of a community thing as well. And I'm definitely circling the point here as opposed to making it. But I think it's incredibly interesting. I would really recommend the Stylish episode on it. So that is the Australian podcast Stylish. They relatively recently talked about the boo-boos and the sort of fashion element there and what it meant for style and brand. And I found that a really fascinating listening. Well, fascinating thing to listen to. It was a really interesting conversation. But I think, yeah, I think this is a big pop culture moment. I do think it's a bit of a flash in the pan this time next year. I do not think we will be seeing the boo-boos in the same way. It would not surprise me though if something had taken its place. And yeah, I think it's the inclusion of celebrities and influencers within this craze that has resulted in the uproar and the fist fights and the reselling and all of that. Our third story of the week, and I ummed and ahed about talking about this, but it is kind of everywhere, and this is a podcast where we talk about the silly and the frothy and the pop culture-y. That's not a word, but you know what I mean. So I am talking about it, and I used for this Vulture's article titled What's Going On with Jojo Siwa and Chris Hughes, and I have not stopped thinking about JoJo, if I'm going to be entirely honest with you, so much so that I did stick an article from The Cut out on Sunday's news wrap over on Frothy's Instagram this week. But then this Vulture article came out, and I do think it's worth talking about. So some background, JoJo Siwa of like Dance Moms fame, she's more of a TikTok star now, she sings, she dances. Entertainer feels like the wrong word, but she is in that world of work, and you know, she is an incredibly talented dancer. I think it's very important to say, no matter where you sit with her or what you think about her, she is a very talented dancer. She works incredibly hard, and I don't think that should ever be discounted. But she was on the UK's most recent series of Big Brother, Celebrity Big Brother. I didn't watch it. It's never really been my thing, but she was on the show, she was one of the finalists, and as I said, JoJo is known online for her creative decisions, and she is definitely someone that lots of people love to mock, but she is very good at brushing it off, I do think so, and you know what, she just carries on, she makes more money, she enjoys her life, she is a divisive figure, but so many people online are, so who are we to say that that is wrong in any way? Before I go further and talk about what is going on with her and Chris Hughes, I really want to stress that she has very recently turned 22. JoJo is very young. Like, I cannot stress this enough. JoJo is a baby in so many ways. As a teen, she obviously shared with the world that she was gay, and she was totally shunned by Nickelodeon. I remember this happening and just being really disappointed by Nickelodeon, and then kind of more aware of maybe where America was with their stance on sexuality. But she came out as gay as a teen and has been very authentic about who she is, and has had a number of very public relationships that are often quite intense online. She is not afraid to post many a TikTok with her current partner. And when she entered the house, the Big Brother house, she was in a relationship. Since being in the house, she has sort of had more time to reflect on herself and identifies now as queer rather than gay. So there's a lot going on, there's a lot of background, but I also think it's all important background. But yes, she has been in the news and sort of everywhere for the past couple of weeks because while on Big Brother, and a show that I really want to stress only took place across 21 days. I mean, I say only, I think being in one place with a group of strangers for 21 days on camera is my idea of hell, if I'm going to be entirely honest with you, but it's hard work. So I imagine, you know, time loses all meaning somewhat, but she was this all took kind of place across 21 days and then in the last week or so that has followed. But she became increasingly close to fellow housemate Chris Hughes, who is like an influencer and just famous personality person and who was on Love Island. His series, I completely forgot which series he was on. But either way, he's a famous Love Islander. He entered the house single, she entered in a relationship. But while on the show, they were caught cuddling and it was believed that a forehead kiss happened while they were both in another hot tub. But despite that and the gossip that maybe their relationship wasn't exactly platonic, they very much stuck to the lines of we're just friends, this is all there is to it. You know, it's just a very close best friend platonic friendship situation. But fuel was very much added to this fire and this conversation when it was revealed that JoJo had split with her girlfriend at the show's wrap party. So the party that the cast and crew have when the show has finished or when the filming is finished. You hear about it with movies and things like that. And JoJo obviously went along. My understanding, based on what JoJo has said, is that she invited her girlfriend to come along to the party. The girlfriend, whose name is Kath Ebbs, said that she didn't want to come to the party, then changed her mind and came to the party. And JoJo felt that that was the time to end things with her. Kath then announced this on TikTok or on her socials and very much hinted that she felt Chris and the relationship with Chris was or did play a part in their relationship. JoJo absolutely refuted this. This is all going on, I want to say, both being discussed on new media in terms of like socials and self-made footage video shot on phones, but it's also being discussed on national TV in the UK. JoJo absolutely refuted what Kath had said and said that Chris just was not part of her decision to split with Kath. That she, you know, she'd had a lot of time to think about her gender and sexuality while in the house, and that she wanted to continue to do that alone and single and solo once she'd left the house, which is quite a mature thing to say, and I fully respect that. Again, I want to stress that she, at this time, was 21 years old. She is a baby. I think all view her as older because she has been on our screens such a long time, because she has such a big personality, because we have grown up with her. Conversation has actually got so loud about JoJo and Chris that they went on Good Morning Britain to defend their platonic friendship. And I mean, they were a little vague when asked where they thought the friendship would go in the coming years, but really stuck to their guns that this is a platonic friendship. There is nothing to see here. We're just very good friends. The drama continues because Chris posted online that he was going to Orlando for JoJo's 22nd birthday. And in the days after, JoJo posted a picture of them having breakfast in a hotel room together. There were also photos of them holding hands and hugging. And really key, guys, they were papped kissing in Mexico. But again, they stuck to the line that we're just friends, it's platonic. And I mean... If my friend kissed one of their friends and then told me it was platonic, I would take their word for it. We're all allowed to experiment. We're all allowed to have a go and see what we like and where we think friendships and relationships should sit in our lives. But I would still question it because how could you not? So I would still ask those questions. And so fans rightly did say and question and hint that they felt that maybe it wasn't as platonic as the two were saying. And very much just didn't really accept the party line that Chris and JoJo were putting out, especially when it was spotted that Chris's ring that he wore sort of throughout Big Brother and is kind of known in the past couple of weeks or months for wearing, it's in a lot of his photos, it's this silver ring that's kind of indented. That is poorly explained and I can't do a better job. Either way, fans noticed that JoJo had it on the necklace that she has been wearing, her current like go-to necklace. And I won't lie to you, they had me fully convinced. The fans have swayed me. I went from being like, you know, it probably is just a platonic friendship. Well, did I? Well, you know, maybe not platonic, but I didn't think it was as serious as it was, or it seems to be. But the fans' arguments around this ring and necklace and the theories and the like snooping that they have done, and therefore, you know, they've made these videos and put them up on TikTok, and I've bought it hook, line and sinker. I won't lie to you. There has been no constructive thinking going on here. I am fully convinced that these two are not just friends. I feel, as well as a huge amount of their fan base feel, that this was confirmed correct when JoJo arrived in London this week for some shows that she had pre-booked, I think well before Big Brother. But at the time of recording, she has been photographed being met at London Airport, or in a London airport, by Chris with hugs and flowers. And I mean, platonic friends do pick you up from the airport, so who am I to say and judge? I am saying and I am judging. There is a lot going on here. How do I feel about this being documented online? I don't feel I can really talk because I myself am documenting it online. But the thing that really frustrates me about all of this, and that I've not really touched on because I think I've enjoyed the drama of it all too much, but there is a conversation taking place online that believes JoJo and Chris to be in a romantic or sexual relationship, and that also believes that Chris has turned, flipped, converted, whatever the word is you want to use, JoJo, so that she is no longer gay and that she is, I don't really want to say straight because, well, because, oh, I mean, in all fairness, well, that's what they're saying, that JoJo has been corrected. I hate that, but corrected, and because of Chris and his, you know, sheer manly animal magnetism, which just irritates the fuck out of me. But I think it's a revolting conversation. It was why I wasn't sure whether or not to talk about it, because I don't want to be in any way adding to this conversation in that regard. I, again, will stress that this is a 21 or 22-year-old woman who has grown up in the public eye and is working out what they want from life, what they like, what they value, what makes them happy. And I really respect her for just getting through this absolute tidal wave of attention. I also would say that she is obviously contributing to this tidal wave of attention. I have no doubt that she thrives in the spotlight, because she wouldn't be doing what she is doing for as long as she has done it without sort of being that way. But I think we have two sort of conversations going on simultaneously here. One is just the joy and the drama and the intrigue of a celebrity very quickly dumping one partner to pursue a partner that they met in a very public location as have kind of pursued very publicly, versus the much more revolting conversation of the discussion around a young woman's sexuality and what people feel they have the right to talk about when they categorically do not. But I'm not going to say anymore. I will just say that it's juicy. I've enjoyed it. I love a little bit of mess. Well, not in my own life, but hey, if you're going to deliver it as a celebrity, I will lap it up, and then I have. I hope you've enjoyed my little retelling too. That's it for news this week, guys, but I wanted to, of course, talk to you about Popped a Pin, which is something I shallow dive this week and I'm hoping to come back to. Last time we spoke, I popped a pin in British Vogue's article in their May edition, but published in April. So if you're struggling to find it, that's where the discrepancy is, I guess you could say. And it was on Finding God the Gen Z Way, written by Lamorna Ash, who was an atheist and identified as an atheist up until about 27, when she found God and converted to Christianity. The piece itself kind of details her discovery of the religion and her journey into, I guess, becoming religious. And it is incredibly beautifully written, really quite funny in places. Well, I found it funny and really interesting. To cut a long story short, she was raised sort of going to church, or going to a Church of England school, like so many of us were. But came back to Christianity and religion when a comedic double act that she'd known at university, well, she heard that they were both converting to Christianity or had both become Christian, and were also both planning on becoming priests. And with the idea that that would make a good article, she started sort of following them around, talking to them, and more regularly attending church, and it sort of very much became part of her weekly timetable. And I really like it. It's quite a reflective piece. It's a very honest piece. At one point she says, obviously, most Sundays I turn up and spend more time thinking about the steamy night I spent with the person I'm dating than the biblical lessons I should be taking in. And obviously becoming religious is no guarantee for anyone living a good moral life. From its beginnings as a fringe sect to the present day, terrible and unspeakable things have been done by those who profess to live by Christian values and ethics. At the same time, I feel so lucky to have ended up where I am now, with a second community, a second home in my city, to which I can turn up anytime I may need it, or take a friend should they need it too. And yeah, it's not something I necessarily would have picked up before, but it piqued my interest, and I'm pleased I read it, and I'm going to leave a link to it in the show notes, because I think it's well worth your time. And I, having never read any of Lamorna's stuff before, really like her as a writer, and will be keeping my eye out for some of her stuff in the future for sure. And something a little different, but that I shallow dive this week and I'm definitely coming back to, and that is the podcast episode recently put out by Should I Delete That? So that's M. Clarkson and Alex Light's podcast. And they interviewed Harriet Cohen. If you're not sure who Harriet is, that's totally fair enough. She is a nurse and a farmer and a TikToker who has found, I think, more fame than she expected over the last week or so, because she featured in Clarkson's Farm, the Amazon Prime show, obviously focusing on Jeremy Clarkson and his newfound love of farming. They're on season 4, I believe. And Harriet just absolutely stole the show. She is incredible. I have never seen someone so hardworking, and I am awestruck by her skills. But she was only in the first few episodes because she was effectively helping out until more staff arrived back on the farm. It's a long story, I'm not going to get into it. But she was interviewed on M. Clarkson, so Jeremy Clarkson's daughter's podcast, and I am fascinated to hear more because, you know, you don't often see a female face to farming, and it's piqued my interest, especially because she is now balancing being somewhat of a farming influencer as well as a nurse and a farmer. And yeah, I'm fascinated, and I will be taking a closer look. And then, of course, it is time for some recs, because it wouldn't be a frothy episode without a couple of recommendations. You guys know how much I love to chat about stuff I like. Up first, I really wanted to recommend Number 7's Hydroluminous Night Gel. I don't think I've talked about this before. I have talked about several steps in my skincare routine because I finally have it down and my skin is happy, and that is a miracle, let me tell you. But this night gel, it's about £16, so it's really not too expensive, and obviously it's a Boots own brand, and it is fucking fabulous. My goodness, I don't really know the difference between a gel and a cream, but I like a gel. I can't really doubt it. It's colder. And it's less heavy, and I don't know. I really like it. I started using it simply because I read online that, guys, I want to stress it, I'm 28, and I'm aware that aging happens. But I am growing this little wrinkle where I don't want a little wrinkle. I have several on my forehead already. I didn't need a third. And it appeared one day out of nowhere, I swear to God. And I don't want it staying. And Botox is just very expensive. I'm not sure I'm there yet. I'm not sure if it's for me. I haven't really given it enough thought to decide. But I read online that just keeping your skin more hydrated can really, really help with the appearance of wrinkles. So I went out and that was my shopping goal, to buy any sort of skincare product that I thought might hydrate my skin. And this has done just that. I obviously use it with the cleanser that I have recommended on a recent pod. And I'm sure the two work in tandem, so it's not just one or the other. But this night gel has been so worth the money. I have loved it so much so that I'm on my second one, and I have a third waiting in my wardrobe for when the day calls. I think it's money really well spent, and it has not given me any spots, clogged any pores, anything of the sort. So get on it. My other recommendation is a reading rec. I know I give you quite a few books, but I am a reader. That's what I do in my spare time. Whether it's about pop culture or a novel, I always am reading something. And this book is called To Gaze Upon Wicked Gods by Molly Chang. I think it probably is more young adult as opposed to new adult, but I adored it. It has been my favourite book I've read this year, and I have read more than 50 books this year. It is a fantasy book with sort of a romance subplot, but not fully in any sort of way. It's very much more about this woman who is basically is going on her own journey, working out whether or not things that she has been told are true, and trying to sort of save her world and her planet all at the same time. You know, there's a lot on a small pair of shoulders here, but I thought it was incredibly well written. I really liked the sort of not so subtle messaging about looking after the planet you live on and caring for it before it is too late. And the final couple of chapters, my jaw was on the floor. So I cannot wait for I can't wait for book two, which comes out in a couple of months. And I cannot recommend it enough. Molly Chang she's firmly up there in one of my top 10 authors, I do think, and her imagery is beautiful. As always, folks, if you got this far, thank you so, so much. You can, of course, find more content from me on Instagram and TikTok at FrothyPod. And if you've not done so already, if you could subscribe to support Frothy in the charts, that would be so incredibly helpful. Thank you so much and have a lovely week, you guys. I'm not the one who's always right.